Are you all the way in? Are you all the way in? Get ready for you. It's All the Way in Radio with your host, Deborah E. Lake. Recognize, claim, and live fully in your life through All the Way in Radio. Have complete confidence that you will succeed. Be fully invested in your life and in your happiness. All the way in radio.
I like that.
Change begins now.
Hello, this is All the Way in Radio, where you learn how to let the words of negative people roll away like water from a duck's back. I'm Deborah E. Lake, and I've got an exciting show for you tonight. We are continuing the conversation about the relationship African-American women have with our hair. And my guests tonight are Dr. C. R. Gibbs and Dr. Carolyn Clancy Miller. I'm going to ask Dr. Gibbs to shed some light on how the legacy, for instance, of racism has impacted the way we see ourselves as beautiful, and the way we look at each other as beautiful women. And I'm going to ask Dr. Clancy Miller to talk about some of the psychological considerations that may be illustrated in our attitudes about our hair. So I am very excited to hear what you have to say, and I'm honored to welcome you to the show. Dr. Miller, hi, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you on the show. And Dr. Gibbs, hello, how are you there?
I am well and very pleased to be with you.
Oh, and I'm very much looking forward to what we have to say. We're going to have I want to push things a little bit. We've done, so you'll know, in case you don't know, we've done one show where we kind of just brought out some of the topics, some of the issues, some of the challenges, some of the things that we think about but don't always talk about. So today I want to kind of push the envelope a little bit, if you're ready for it.
I think I can handle it.
Okay. And Dr. Gibbs, I'd like to start with you. Talk
sure.
a little bit about how the standard of beauty, which, believe it or not, is still pretty much European-based features and things like that. How has that helped to shape the way we see ourselves as beautiful and how we see beauty in each other? And has that changed over the years as far as you can tell?
Well, you know, I'm in the nation's capital, and we're still getting over the fact that at President Obama's second state dinner last night, Beyonce showed up with flowing blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, this is emblematic in many ways of if you'll pardon the expression, what I believe is wrong about our focus. One of the linchpins of white supremacy that is least discussed is the suppression of hair, or if you will, the creation of a hair opposition, which is directly opposite our traditional heritage. In traditional African society, for example, among the Mende in Sierra Leone, a woman's hair was expected to be well groomed. And they were, if you will, turned and twisted and plaited and shaped into beautiful and complicated styles. The dishevelled neglected hair was an absolute anathema to the Mende. And so we didn't come here feeling bad about our hair. We got here and we were made to feel bad about an aspect of not only our physicality, but also something very intrinsic to us coming through the lens of our culture.
Oh, yeah. You put it so well. And now it's very much connected with economic growth among women, black women. If you don't look a certain way, you can be penalized economically. One of the things that really strikes me is in the 70s, you know, we went through this black awareness culture time where we were wearing afros and proud of our heritage and kinkiness and things like that. But that whole attitude, as far as I can tell, seems to have, we've lost it. We don't even talk about it now.
It crumbled.
From what I see. What do you think happened?
Well, you know, when we look at the continued brainwashing, continued daily, minute by minute, second by second doses of an idea about our physical selves that is hostile to our self and well-being, so that we can still say, you know, if you're brown, you can stick around. If you're yellow, you're mellow. But if you're black, get back. Those things that Reverend Joseph Lowry said so hauntingly at President Obama's inauguration are still very much with us. The problem is that some of our young people want to get to a post-black or post-racial phase where they wish and would like to decide that none of that matters. But it does matter how you look, how you groom yourself. Do you have pride in the way you look? Is intrinsic to your personal self-image and valuation. And at the same time, we find consistently from the Clark test with the baby doll in the 40s all the way down to the work that Keri Davis did in the video A Girl Like Me just a couple years ago, that black children have already, if you will, taken within themselves that there's something wrong with themselves.
Oh, that's a perfect segue. You're great. I love you. I want to bring Dr. Miller in, and that brings me right to the message that our young girls are getting. What do you have to say about that? How are they being taught to value themselves in the context of this whole hair thing?
Well, I mean, I think just what you were saying is right on point, is that they're not being taught to value who they truly are. They're taught to value an image. And whether it be hair or weight, what they see on television is really a false image. It's something that doesn't really even exist in terms of authenticity. So they're really being taught that who they are is not enough, that who they are is not beautiful, and that they need to change something about themselves to be enough. And it really gets to the core of self-esteem and identity and the constant pressures to accommodate or to be accepted by the broader culture. And when they look on television and in magazines and see leaders like Beyonce or people who, you know, represent beauty to them, and then they turn around and look in the mirror and see themselves, there is a huge divide. And it says something. It creates an image or a message that they internalize. If we don't tell them any different, then they do internalize it and say, you know what, I'm just not enough. And, you know, I love braids and all of that kind of stuff, and I think they're very easy to manage and take care of. But most of our little girls have extensions. It's not just braiding their own hair into beautiful styles. It's adding to their hair. And there's a message that the length of your hair is not beautiful, that only long hair is beautiful. And, you know, it kind of goes on and on with the color and everything else.
Yeah, I remember a skit that Whoopi Goldberg used to do. I think her stand-up is hilarious, and she's got, you've probably seen it as well, where she used to put, she said she plays this little girl that she puts a shirt on her head, and plays like she has long hair that she can shake and things like that. And when the first time I saw it, it's funny. It really is. But she has a way of presenting humor in a way that makes you think. And I saw how many young girls are being taught that they're not good enough.
Right.
Just as they are. Just the message of the hair. And what? How does that turn into action with these young girls? For instance, one of the striking things that I know about and disturbs me a lot is that in grade school, young girls are being pushed to do oral sex on little boys. That's wanting to please. How does all this link in? And part of what I want to do is look at it from the historical point of view, the psychological point of view, and give parents, you know, some concrete things that they can do to counter this. And I also want to talk about what is the responsibility of the people who are out there, like the Beyoncés, and I don't want to pick on any one particular person, but they have the visibility. What is their responsibility? What, anybody, jump in, you know, and tell me what you think.
Well, I remember, in fact, I've been so moved by a recent piece I read that I'm going to be putting it in my lectures to young women. There is a brand of popular music that is espoused by some artists. I think one is called Keisha. It's about the joys of drunk sex with a man, and which is counterintuitive if you stop a moment to think about it. If you're drunk and he's drunk, but the way that the artists are singing this is that it's an anthem of female empowerment, because in the twisted logic of popular music, this is being presented as the woman taking charge, but she was drunk too. In fact, it may have well been that the man is taking care, has taken advantage of her, but it's not being sold that way. And so, you know, I learn more and more about these artists that are popularizing this kind of, well, sexual degeneracy and certainly sexual appropriation, I decided that I'm going to mention that having drunk sex may be a man's dream, but it should not be a self-respecting woman's dream. Actually, it shouldn't be a man's dream either. But this don't go for the hype. I don't care how catchy the lyrics are. I don't care how seductive the music is. You need to respect yourself and not listen to music that doesn't respect you.
Don't support it. That's that's the message. Don't support something. You want to say something, Doctor?
Yeah, I was going to say, okay. I agree with that, to not support it and then to speak up. You were saying, you know, is it the artist's responsibility? Is it the entertainer's responsibility to say something? And I know that they have a lot of influence. However, then you're not capable of saying anything about something that you're living. I think it kind of disqualifies you to, you know, to comment, and at the same time, you've had liposuction. You know what I mean? So I think, though, that there are many people in society who are capable of saying something. Teachers are capable of saying something, aunts, uncles, neighbors. But we have been silent. I remember going to Starbucks recently, and next door to it was a gas station, and there were a group of African-American girls, apparently came from a school that were doing that were washing cars. They were trying to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
I was horrified by what they were wearing to raise money, and I think they might have been cheerleaders. But they all had Daisy Dukes. They're all 15, 16, or younger. And they all had Daisy Dukes on, cleavage showing, stomachs out, bending over. It was completely inappropriate, in my opinion. And, you know, if someone who had a major platform said something, I think that they might hear it. But I think that what was probably most important were for the people who were getting their car washed to say something, who thought something about it, for parents, for the coaches, or, you know, whoever allowed it to happen, and for people just like you and me who see it, but we don't ever say anything. You know, we see young girls and young guys walking by, you know, guys with their pants down, and who is really saying something about it? I know that we do have some folks that are saying things. They come in the church, and sometimes people say something, you know. But on a daily basis, we have more influence over our own children, our own neighbors, et cetera, and I think we're the ones who are responsible.
You know, that is so true. Yeah, and yeah, that's good. But where do you think fear comes in? Because when I'm thinking about talking to someone that I don't know nowadays, you don't know who you're talking to, or what kind of response they're going to have. I'm going to date myself a little bit. I grew up in a neighborhood in a time when your neighbors looked out for your kids.
Right.
You couldn't do anything in the neighborhood without someone down on the corner saying, calling your mother and saying, "Do you know what your daughter's doing?"
Right.
But nowadays, we don't even know the person who's living right across the hall from us or right next door to us, let alone their children. And I'm wondering, I see what you're saying, but I'm wondering how to really put that into action today. Because sometimes I'm afraid to walk on some streets.
Sure, sure. And I'm not saying that we should all go to areas of town that we're not comfortable in just to give a message. I'm saying that the people who are in the community, in my own community, with the children that I am around and that I have influence over, that's where I need to speak. And I think when it comes to strangers, there's ways to say things with grace and dignity, recognizing that these images have been internalized and that they think that they're beautiful. With that kind of understanding, there is a way to say, had you looked at these pants too, these are really nice. I think you would look good in this. I think you are beautiful. You know, or you're incredibly beautiful. Had you thought about wearing something like this? You know, those kinds of things without necessarily tearing a person down.
Yeah. Exactly.
And, you know, just so the level of intimacy with respect to the relationship will dictate what you can and can't say.
Exactly. And that's one of the things I wanted to make sure people heard because, you know. So here's a question, and I want both of you to kind of say whatever you think on this. In the context of what we're talking about now, I think we're kind of skirting around knowing yourself and self-knowledge and taking the time that you need. A lot of times women spend up to 8 hours in one day in beauty shops and salons getting their hair done, right? Do you think that's like a distraction? Because there's the 8 hours, up to 8 hours, and then when you come out, there's an interest more so than you would think on your head. You know, you're paying more attention to it. As I was doing research for this and my staff were doing research, we're finding out how much some black women think about their hair and how they let attitudes and what will happen to the hair that's on their head dictate what they do in their lives, whether or not they exercise, for instance, whether or not they go swimming. You know, all of that. Do you think that's a distraction that distracts us from doing the work that we need to do to know who we are in our souls?
Well, it's becoming a lot more difficult, in fact, for us in many ways to know who we are. And I don't mean there's obviously quantitatively more information about black folk out now than ever before. And yet when I go into the schools, I see a marked decline in knowledge among the young people. And part of this reflects the ways in which their parents communicate to them in ways large and small about learning about themselves. One example that comes to mind is a young man confronted one of my former coworkers, who was a leading figure in a civil rights office in a major government department, and said he just learned about this wonderful song, and his mother asked him, what was it? He said, it's called Lift Every Voice and Sing. And he wanted to know, why was that never sung in his house? Why did he have to wait and go away to college to sing this song or to know about it. And here we're not, you know, we're talking about economically viable, established, college-educated, middle-class black folk. So this is a thing that crosses the socioeconomic strata inside the black community. And we find that as parents pass on an apathetic concern about their history, they don't take their children to the museums, they don't take them to lectures or study groups, it is regenerated generation after generation after generation. And again, this is whether it's middle class, upper class, no class, or low class, these things come in our community in part because there's a great deal of anti-intellectualism, and secondly, because of the lousy way that history was taught to our grandparents or parents, and the fact that they never saw people that looked like themselves in the history books.
That's interesting, because I'm still stuck on how we got from spending time knowing our history. That's where all the black history classes came from back in the 70s, the sit-ins and all of that, dashikis and what do you call them?
It was a fad.
How did we get from there to where we are now?
Yeah, nothing can resist the constant steamroller press of white supremacy. We don't have a comparable media that can supply the positive images and information and bring it into our homes the way the media that harms us has access to our homes, hearts, and minds.
Well, you know, that brings me to ask about what do you think about BET and that whole station or whatever. I'll have to say I don't watch it regularly, but I do know it exists, and I know it is geared toward black people.
There ought to be a warning label on it that says videos and BET are bad for black people's health, mental health.
Mm-hmm.
There just ought to be a label, just like a Surgeon General's warning on a pack of cigarettes. There are things that are not good for us that we have been led to believe are. And we have to make the decision to take, just like we have to get off cigarettes or get off drugs or get off booze, we have to wean ourselves away from images that are not in our best interest.
The few times that I've seen some programs there, I totally agree with you. So we're going to take a quick little break, and here's what I want to go talk about when we come back. And I brought this statement up in my first show, and I didn't say much about what I thought of it, but I want to get your thoughts, and I'm going to share my thoughts on it as well. And it's a woman's hair is her crown and glory. We're going to talk a little bit about that and some more things when we come back from this short break. We'll be right back.
Isn't that John and Rachel over there?
I thought they broke up.
Broke up? When?
A while back. John looks good.
Why wouldn't he? Who told you they broke up?
Rachel did.
Well, maybe she was just talking, venting.
No, Rachel found that John had HIV, and she was going to leave him.
What? HIV?
Yeah, she was worried that she had it too, but her test came back negative. I wonder what made her change her mind. Maybe...
What?
Well, when my brother told me he had HIV, he gave me a book. Said it would help us talk. You remember. The title was Your Neighbor Has AIDS.
Oh yeah, I read that too.
And when Rachel told me about John, I asked her not to make any decisions until she'd read it.
That was smart. That book helped you and your brother.
Yeah, and what I learned helped me talk with Mom, too.
You think that made a difference for them?
I'd bet money on it, and you know I'm not a betting woman.
But you are a great sis and good friend.
Your Neighbor Has AIDS by Deborah E. Lake is available at DeborahELake.com, Amazon.com, and select bookstores.
Okay, we are back, and I'm here with Dr. Gibbs and Dr. Miller, and we're talking about the relationship to black women we have with our hair. So I'd like to get your thoughts on the statement, a woman's hair is her crown and glory. And before you do that, I'm going to tell you, the first time I heard this statement, I was an adult in my 30s, and I had daughters of my own. My father died, and I was around family that I hadn't been around for a long time. And since then, since they saw me the last time, I'd cut my hair. And one family member was totally insulted because I cut my crown and glory. What does that say to you guys from a historical point of view? What can you, if you have anything to say, psychological and if you want from personal, and then I would like to share a little bit about what I think as well.
Well, if I, again, I would say that from traditional African society, there was no problem with taking care of black hair. It's once we put it up against the European ideals of hair care that we begin to suffer. There's an interesting book by someone, I don't know if it's just a relative of yours, Sister Lake, but the book is called Blue Veins and Kinky Hair, Naming and Color Consciousness in African America by Obiageli Lake. And you know, there's some wonderful quotes in there about how hair was important to men and women in traditional African society. And we get a chance to see that reflected in the African proverbs that touch on hair. We have evidence from ancient Egypt and ancient Nubia, the Nile Valley, again, to the medieval descriptions by European explorers of the absolute plethora of ways in which African people wore their hair. So that we understand that the problem didn't start, again, we didn't bring it with us, we picked it up here when we were inserted, injected, if you will, into this society. And I think that, you know, we have ways that we can get around this, but we must understand that in traditional African society, a woman's hair was her crowning glory. It certainly was, as the body was a canvas for all kinds of artistic and cultural expression. And it is my hope that maybe one day we can get a chance to share this history with our young men and women and let them know that they have far more options than to simply copy other people's hair and how they style it.
Yes. You have any thoughts, Dr. Miller?
Well, I guess my thoughts kind of come from biblical history, although I am not a theologian or a biblical scholar. But there is a scripture in 1 Corinthians 11:15 that talks about a woman's hair
mm-hmm.
being her glory.
Mm-hmm.
And it specifically, you know, says long hair is her glory. And I think people take it out of context because the whole passage was really talking about worship and who should teach or preach or prophesy with their head covered or uncovered. And then it kind of goes into whether a man should cut his hair and the fact that it was a disgrace to him culturally. But if a woman had long hair, it was her glory. So it was kind of this distinction between women ministers and male ministers in the church in 1 Corinthians, and they're talking about what women should be doing in the church. And it was a issue where there was just a lot of confusion, and Paul was trying to bring some order to a place of confusion, and he just used it as an example to say, well, if
mm-hmm.
a man cut his hair, it's disgraceful, but for a woman to have long hair, it's her glory. That's really where it comes from, that's particular passage. And I think that people take that kind of stuff out of context and then therefore kind of have this sweeping view of it across cultures, across generations, that women should have long hair and that hair is their glory. But if, coming from a biblical standpoint, and I know, like I said, I'm not a theologian,
mm-hmm.
but for Proverbs 31 talks about the internal characteristics of a woman truly being her glory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that, yes, you know, just from a natural standpoint, hair and the way a person keeps themselves and the way they present themselves, you know, there is a level of beauty associated with that that's attractive to people, particularly to men and women, et cetera. You know, there's an attraction. But the
mm-hmm.
true glory is what we miss in teaching our culture and in teaching women and young girls, is that true glory is an internal, it's an intrinsic glory. It's a character. It's a hardworking woman. It's a woman who cares about others, who's industrious, who is creative. You know, I could go on and on, but it's a culmination of those things that really is her true glory.
That's, oh, gosh, I love this conversation. I really do, because Dr. Gibbs, you giving the historical part from all the way back to the African continent and different cultures there, and how that whole culture honored hair and the body as well. I'm very glad that you said that, the body as well. And you bringing in, Dr. Miller, the biblical references as well, and including the extension of it, which is where my reaction, I think, was, my personal reaction. It was more about being feeling negated by his comment, because it was like he was saying it as though the only thing I had was my hair and I cut it. And I'm thinking, all of the other things about me, what about that? You know, and I think also the fact that I was older when I heard it, it came out of left field. But this whole, I'm really glad that you fleshed it out and put some more things out there for people to think about. Because in the context of people believing, black women believing that their glory is in their hair, I think that part of what has happened in misreading it is what makes it make sense for people to put things on their hair that they can't, where their scalp can't breathe, for instance, and they can't get any sun on their scalp, right? And there are certain things that you just can't do because you have a weave or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad. I'm wondering if you have any, either one of you have anything more to say about this, where we are right now, before we move on to another part of it.
If we believe that women enjoy versatility, again, then I would encourage them to take a broader look at traditional African hairstyles, and I mean, mm-hmm. they would be amazed. And yes, you may wind up looking a little different. But if you're strong in your beliefs, if you know that this hairstyle is reflective of your culture, you don't have to apologize. No mistakes were made when sisters got the hair they got. You know, whether they wave it, shave it, curl it, twirl it, wax it, relax it, press it, or repress it. The idea ought to be that this is a reflection of my personal pride. And I'm not trying to copy Marilyn Monroe or somebody in today's culture. But without information that supports even those women who want to look at a greater use of African hairstyles, they're not going to do it. And this is the nexus between education and a desire to and culture. Mm-hmm. This is where we, this is a fault line. And until we do something to shore that line up, we're going to continue to have these kinds of conversations. We ought to be proud of the fact, for example, that the Mau Mau in the 50s in Kenya wore their hair in dreadlocks as a symbol, as a statement of strength and power. I mean, we ought to understand that and a symbol of freedom. But until we associate, when Kerry Davis and when the Hoptons did their study, their doll study in the United States in the 70s, they found that the best way to turn this around was positive reinforcement. Mm-hmm. Positive reinforcement. Is there a way to get around this? Yes. It requires positive reinforcement. And until parents understand that, we're going to continue to bump our head against the wall of white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think there is another issue, too, just with respect to some of the practical things like getting a job, et cetera.
Yes.
I was talking to a very good friend of mine who does have a natural hairstyle, and she was talking about another friend who had been trying, who's brilliant, accomplished, et cetera. But she has, I think she has dreads, or she might have, I don't know what her hairstyle is, but it's natural.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been looking for a job as a principal and hadn't gotten one. And it wasn't just because her hair was natural, but it was also just the level of attention she gave to, I guess, grooming in terms of it being kempt or unkempt, or, you know, the appearance of that.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me, you know, should I tell her? Because I think she's always being disappointed because she's not getting these jobs. And, you know, what should I say? And I told her, of course, if it's your good friend, you need to tell her what she thinks. And she really needs to know that if, you know, if this community, if this school, if these parents don't want a person to that looks like me, then, you know, then they just don't. Or you may have to make some modifications.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the job you want. And, I mean, that's a hard role, but I do think that there is this economic issue when we start talking about just going on and being ourselves, when the reality is it will close doors in some places.
That's true. That's part of what I was talking about earlier, that the economics of it. For instance, I had my hair locked for
mm-hmm.
years. And what started happening with me was my locks were heavy because I have very thick hair, and my hair started getting thin. So I cut it just for that, not for any other reason. And a colleague of mine, who's no longer a colleague, by the way, looked at me and said, oh, my gosh, you look so, needless to say, he was white, you look so different. You can go anywhere you want to now.
Wow.
The comedian Paul Mooney says that he puts it another way. He says that when your hair is nappy, it makes white folks unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, and we're seeing a concomitant practice by younger black folk, which is the whitening of the resume.
Mm-hmm.
The New York Times has done a couple of pieces on this, which is even in the so-called post-racial or post-black generation, they're still doing things to restrict who they really are, and so they will take out the watch. The New York Times reported, for example, that folk will go from, instead of Talani Lanjore Tompkins, it's now T.L. Tompkins.
Mm-hmm.
They will take out the fact that they were with the Black Student Union and leave in the fact that they did post-grad work at a Jewish institute. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, these are the kinds of things that are happening today with the current generation. And again, it makes you weep for the future. If this, you know, so our grandkids will be caught up in the same endless cycle of repressing themselves culturally, physically, and so forth.
Yeah, and you know, I think about my grandkids. They're half German and half African American, and I have no idea what's going to happen with them as far as where they identify ethnically, because it's very difficult to have a blend.
Mm-hmm.
And we're constantly, even today, with a black president in the White House, we're constantly made to choose between one or the other.
Who is half black and half white? You know?
Pardon me?
Huh? I said, who is half black and half white?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So here's a question. I want to ask you guys what you think about the fact that we spend, many of us spend a lot of time acquiring things, hair that is not us. It's not who we are, one, historically or any other way, and two, it's not we didn't grow it. It's not our hair. And we put ourselves at risk. I'm talking specifically about the weaves that people get, and a lot of women go, sometimes they have to go into debt and put things on layaway, make
yeah.
payments and all of that to get something to look a certain way when you step outside the door. And in that process, they ignore their health, because a lot of times you're not going to get out and go to the gym and sweat, you know. Or they go on a vacation and don't hop in the ocean and get wet. You know, that kind of thing. What does that say about us from a psychological point of view, Doctor? Please, let us know.
Well, I think it says that we have misprioritized what's most important.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously we placed hair over financial stability or over happiness, over health, et cetera, those kinds of things. And we have this distorted thought process about the level of importance, its level of importance. And, you know, and as I mentioned a minute ago, that we have, you know, identified, we have created an identity around how we look and what our hair looks like. And I think that that's, you know, really what it's saying is that we have some distorted thinking, we have a distorted self-image, and because of that, as a consequence of that, we have misprioritized our lives around hair.
Yeah.
It's interesting that I'm sorry, Dr. Miller, were you going to say something else?
No, go ahead. That's all right.
We have to understand that there are forces, and I'm not talking about necessarily conspiracy, but economic forces that recognize that recently ethnic hair products jumped 3.2% in terms of sales to over $1.5 billion, despite a decline in the sales of overall hair products. And so that there are people in the community that are offering lower prices to get you to switch. The New York Times recently reported on the battle that Dominicans are taking, you know, hairstyling from Black Americans. And then you have the Asians that have come in and are selling. My favorite brand is called, what is it, Newborn Free Silky Straight European Hair, which in many cases is not even human hair. In some cases it is, but in some cases it's not. And to glue that into a child's hair, I think, you know, if it's not child abuse, it's certainly close to it. But it, again, reflects the deep well of Malcolm X, you know, in 64, that famous remark, who taught you to hate yourself from the crown of your head to the soles of your feet?
Mm-hmm.
And we're still, we can paper it over with who's in the White House and all of that. It doesn't matter because you can't change this trend in 4 years or 8 years. This is something that speaks to the heart of who we perceive ourselves in this society, and it's going to take time to change it.
Yeah, yeah. And you touched on something that we haven't even broached, and that is the economics of hair care is not in our control. And in the other show, I said we are like something like 80-something% of the market, and we don't reflect that in ownership.
Things have gotten so bad that I understand a young lady has formed a National Black Cosmetology Association last year in order to better organize to resist the onslaught of folk who want to take over what remains of Black people doing Black people's hair. And so that we're threatened on a number of fronts, again, culturally, as socially, and now economically. And even though, you know, we need to be able to take a look at whether or not these hair care practices are inimical to the health of Black people's hair.
Yeah.
But
the
it seems
health,
clear. Yeah.
Hair
that,
and body.
That, mm-hmm.
Yeah. What were you saying?
I was just going to say it obviously Black salon operators feeling the way they do, feeling besieged, are perhaps not in the best position to you know, as my wife's hairdresser did, you know, say I'm not going to put, you know, glue into young children's hair. But
yeah.
Not everybody can take that stand.
Yeah.
And have a large enough client base to be able to, you know, to resist it, to take the hit. But
yeah.
Clearly, you know, there's more to come on this entire subject.
Yeah, that article that you mentioned, the Dominicans running some of the Black salons, undercutting them with their prices is what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And advertising in within, you know, like blocks or right as the customers walk out the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that I was encouraging people in the other show and on my website is to identify us and support us economically and you know that's one way to start turning things around in that context, the economic part, and claim some of that power.
Well, there was the ABBA symbol, the beautiful Black woman symbol that used to be on the back of Black owned hair care products. And it's AHBAI, I think, and then it had the inner circle or oval, It had, you know, a sister, and it had her hair. This was one way that hair manufacturers, I guess, what, 10 or 15 years ago, decided that they would designate so that the customers, the consumers, would know what kinds of companies they were dealing with and whether or not they would deal with, they were dealing with even black-owned companies. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's happening now.
No, I don't think it is. I've looked, and it's hard. It's difficult to find ourselves. And I don't think a lot of people are even thinking that way. They're just thinking, where can they get what they want, you know?
Yeah. At the cheapest possible price.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and quickly, if possible. Get me in and out. Well, we're running a little low on time, so I want to give you last thoughts. What would you like to leave our listeners with as far as this topic is going? And Dr. Miller, would you be so kind as go first?
Sure. What I'd say is that we are more than our hair. I think that becomes a reality when people go through health crises like cancer where they lose their hair and they start to realize that the substance, of who they are is not, you know, relative to how much hair they have or how long their hair is or how thick it is or how straight it is. It has a whole lot to do with your relationships with mankind and how you are giving back to your community and your capacity for love and your capacity to grow and learn and to just leave a mark in this world. And that's what really is most important. You know, at the end of the day, it all turns gray, it all starts falling out, you know. And we need to begin to invest in things that have longevity, that things that we can pass down to the next generation. Substance is what really matters, and hair is not substantive.
So true, yes. Dr. Gibbs.
Well, they're speaking of hair, I recall an African proverb that says, "What you do in black hair, you will eat in white hair." And what it means is that, you know, whatever kind of stuff you did when you were young, you'll be regretting it when you get old. and I think that the idea, if there's one thing that we can somehow get across, certainly to our listeners and to our friends and family, is to fight the image. Don't accept other people's standards of beauty. Be prepared to question them and be prepared to look and do a little research and see what else is out there. Maybe there is a healthier way to do it. So in other words, I just leave you with this. If you love yourself, you wouldn't automatically, you know, take a can opener and open a bottle of poison and drink it. Well, then we talk about treating the body as a temple. Let's treat your hair as a temple and let you drink from the well of our history, consciousness, and culture rather than simply mindlessly following the mainstream image and standard of our beauty.
Very well put, both of you. We're going to continue the conversation. So I'm hoping people will call, email, and I will be in touch with you because there's a couple of things or both of you I'd like to follow up on offline. So look to hear from my producer, okay? And to my listeners, you can learn more about my guest today at my website, DeborahElake.com. Go to the multimedia page and follow the link for the day's show. Doctors, both, thank you for being with me tonight, and it's been a pleasure talking with both of you.
Thank you.
This is a very complex topic, and you both gave us a lot to think about. Much continued success to both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all I have for you tonight. Thanks for listening, and stay connected at DeborahElake.com. Check out the Religious Abuse Awareness Month that's coming up. That's new, and it's coming up in a few weeks, and I think you'll like it. This is All the Way In Radio. I'm Deborah E. Lake, here to let you know that you can recognize, claim, and live fully in your life. Goodbye, world.
This has been All the Way in Radio. Remember, be all the way in your life. Until next time, get connected at alltheweyin.org. While you're there, check out our resource section. It will help you recognize, claim, and live fully in your life. Become part of All the Way In and have full access to special discounts and programs. Visit alltheweyin.org for details. Take All the Way In Radio wherever you go through iTunes. Questions or comments? Ideas for future shows? Email them to info@alltheweyin.org. All the Way In Radio is a production of Lake Enterprise. Audio production by Marcy Height. Creative consultation, Design House. Music by Andre Morganoff and Gautam.